Thanks for joining us. My name is Ibrahim Sani. We're looking at Awani Green Action and how we can tell the ESG story better. Joining us in the studio is Sushil Purohit, CEO of Gentari. Sushil, thanks very much for taking the time to come over to this place. This is, of course, an area or an industry that I am personally interested in. I've been driving a hybrid for the past, I think, 2 years now. It's always interesting to see the developments when it comes to the EV ecosystem. Maybe you can share with us the idea of how Gentari is operating in and how the relationship is with Malaysian corporates.
Well, thank you so much for inviting, Ibrahim, and good morning to everyone. Well, let's start with Gentari. I mean, Gentari was formed by Petronas last year. It is a company that is formed to pursue the opportunities in energy transition. And we do that with three of our core pillars: renewables, hydrogen, and green mobility. Now, you know, when you talk about ambition, we have a pretty stiff ambition. On the renewable side, we would like to deploy 30 to 40 gigawatt of renewable, both wind and solar, by 2030. On the hydrogen side, we would like to do about 1.2 million tons per annum of hydrogen by 2030, which is a pretty steep target. And then on the green mobility side, we would like to be a preferred partner for Asia Pacific, and we would like to have a market share of over 10% in key countries in Asia Pacific. And that would mean that we would, you know, invest in 25,000 public charging points by 2030. And our short-term goal in that is you know, to have 9,000 public charging points by 2026.
So how many charging points do you have now?
So we have about 350 plus charging points
and
at this
point
of time.
And so far only in Malaysia, right?
We have it in India and in Malaysia, both countries.
Mm-hmm. The idea here is, of course, a lot of people, when they talk about Gentari, Gentari is, of course, still new. People are still getting used to the idea of what Gentari is, who Gentari is. But the only interactions that they have is the charging points. So they don't normally understand the upstream version of the business, the downstream version of the business. The only interaction that they have is with the touch points at the Petronas stations. Do you feel that there's a lot more that needs to be told when it comes to Gentari's business lines, especially these three pillars that you speak of?
Oh, absolutely. I think, you know, look, we are positioning ourselves as a sort of integrated clean energy provider, and in that space, we would, you know, we are positioning ourselves to become a global leader, right? So if you look at what we are doing, if I sort of talk about beyond the charging points and beyond green mobility, we have already close to 2,000 megawatt of renewable capacity in Malaysia, in Australia, and in India. I mean, in India, for example, we are one of the largest renewable provider. We already have 1.4 gigawatt, and we are positioning ourselves to grow both in the commercial and industrial renewable side, but also on the utility scale renewables. The same in Australia. We have, you know, acquired a company just a couple of months back, which we want to scale up now to become one of the larger player in the renewable space. And in Malaysia, we are keen to invest both on the renewable side, but also on the green hydrogen. Now, when I talk about green hydrogen, we are also looking at becoming a go-to partner for the industry and a large, large-scale hydrogen producer globally. And there again, we are looking at India, we are looking at Malaysia, we're looking at Canada, and also Australia as our countries where we would invest in hydrogen space.
Then let's talk about some of the MOUs that you've signed, including that with Tata Power, especially moving Gati. These are the kind of India commitments that you are establishing in India. Maybe talk more to that effect.
Look, I think the MOUs that we signed with Tata Power, moving and Gati, these are on the fleet services. It is on the vehicle as a service. This is where we have agreed to take 5,000 vehicles from Tata Power. These are, you know, the four-wheeler commercial vehicles, which are meant for logistics. In over next 3 years, we would take 5,000 vehicles, and then we would also lease it out to, you know, companies like Gati and Moving. So these are the three MOUs that we signed last week in India to really, you know, accelerate our vehicle as a service business, which will also facilitate our investments on the charging points as well.
A lot of these companies, not the Tata Power Gati and Moving, but a lot of companies that are thinking about energy transition, restriction that they face is on capital injection in terms of how much they can invest over the next 4 or 5 years. They're also hamstrung when it comes to network. These are the kind of constrictions that do not apply for Gentari, and that's why the targets that you mentioned early on in this conversation is actually quite steep and quite lofty. But when I had this conversation with Petronas downstream bosses a few weeks ago, they're very bullish and very optimistic about the growth, not just about the Petronas downstream, but generally speaking about Gentari per se. Does this add some sort of a pressure on you personally as the CEO of Gentari to achieve these kind of lofty targets?
Look, I think the whole idea of Gentari, which already was explained to me by Datuk Tengku Taufik, the you know, Gentari's chairman and the CEO of Petronas, I think it was, you know, this whole ambition was well envisioned, and clearly, you know, there's a lot of commitment from Petronas side, and you know, the board of directors and also the executive leadership team. So I'm pretty confident, and you know, even if these are lofty targets, these are achievable targets. If we actually keep our focus and keep the commitment, I think we should be able to achieve this. Primarily because I think the world is transitioning towards a cleaner future. If you talk about countries, companies, industries, everyone is putting, you know, setting their target to decarbonize by, let's say, 2040, 2050, 2060. So we are talking about the whole world transitioning towards a net zero environment, and which would require enormous amount of investment in renewable energy. So I think even if the target sounds lofty, I think these are very, very achievable target if we put our focus on it.
We'll go for one short break. When we come back, we'll discuss a little bit more with Sushil of Gentari. Thanks for staying on with us. I have with me Sushil Purohit, the CEO of Gentari, the energy transition company. Let's talk more about hydrogen. When I speak with some of my guests when it comes to hydrogen technology and hydrogen energy and transition, the key challenge here is on trying to see how it can be applied and adopted by the industry. Do you feel that this would be the kind of challenge that Gentari is facing in terms of industry adoption, or is it more of trying to create that a more efficient hydrogen output as opposed to some other players downstream?
I think, look, hydrogen if you talk about energy transition and the way we are accelerating, I think hydrogen and hydrogen-based fuels, green hydrogen-based fuels, will be key to decarbonize, first of all, some of the key sectors which are hard to decarbonize. Then also to make sure that we have green fuel that can sort of balance the grid. I think there are a lot of technology companies which are working towards using hydrogen at this point of time already. But what we need to do is, you know, first of all, green hydrogen needs a lot of renewable power. Mm. So we need to create policies and regulatory framework that can actually facilitate
You don't feel the regulations are there.
But this is a new thing, and you know, every country is now starting
right,
to invest in that.
How far are we behind in terms of regulatory requirements that fits industry demand, and how do you think this gap is going to be closed?
I think, look, there's a lot of good steps have been taken as a part of the national energy policy. If you talk about Malaysia as such. I mean, one thing is, you know, the whole corporate green power agreement. I think that is really a step forward. But if we want to you know, move forward on the renewable side and also on the hydrogen, I think it is important that we create policies to encourage the use of hydrogen. We create policies that actually incentivizes the use of hydrogen and also incentivizes the investment in hydrogen. Right now, just one thing that I would like to say, where is the demand coming from? I think the demand is going to come from companies which are going to decarbonize their own assets, the RE100 companies which have really committed to you know, accelerate their energy transition, and the companies which are going to invest in hydrogen per se, because they would require a lot of green energy. Now, if we can create policies that can attract and retain these companies from outside, I think we are talking about bringing in a lot of, you know, foreign direct investments, creating employments, etc. But if we do not create policies which incentivizes and retain these companies, then I think this could be a missed opportunity. And this is not only for Malaysia, but this is for any company. But Malaysia has a great chance to actually create a low carbon economy, a hydrogen economy per se, if we do the right things going forward.
Okay, what kind of regulatory changes or support you need?
I think a lot of countries are looking at incentivizing already. You know, if you talk about United States,
where the
tax breaks are there, the production tax credits are there. I think these are the things we can sort of think about as a policy matter. What we would like is the government, they are doing a lot of good things, but I think they can continue to think about policies which can enhance the investment in this sector.
Okay, what about Petronas? Because they are in a unique position where they are both regulator and player. Do you feel that Petronas is pulling their weight in terms of trying to affect these kind of regulatory changes?
Well, we are playing our role in shaping policies and clearly advocating what can be done.
I can imagine that being done in Malaysia, but what about the markets that Gentari wants to enter?
I think it's the same in other markets. We are talking the same in India, for example, and in other markets where similar policy formulation needs to happen to really facilitate investments in the clean energy space. I think in India, to some extent, has actually thought quite a bit about having a holistic and structured policy environment.
More so than Malaysia.
At this point of time, well, I can't say it is more or less, but
yeah.
I think, I can talk about India as such, and they have created a policy where they are addressing, all segments, whether it is fuel, it is, green fuel, green energy, farming, industry, green mobility, construction. I think they have looked at the whole thing. Which is actually encouraging a lot of investments in India if you look at this point of time.
Like Gentari, for instance, that's the clearest example.
Absolutely.
Do you feel that there is a long way to go then for Malaysia to get to that level, or at least pari passu, or the same level with India right now?
I must say that Malaysia, Malaysian government is really keen to move fast on the energy transition pathway. We have seen a lot of policy changes. For example, the national energy policy that came last year, and whole the corporate green power agreements. I think these are really good steps forward.
Okay, but taking the market away from Malaysia and India, what about ASEAN or some of the markets that Gentari is aiming to penetrate quite considerably?
So we would like to also go to the adjacent markets like Indonesia and Thailand.
Mm.
Going forward, which is
big markets for vehicular transition,
which is where a lot of investments can happen, both
in
on the
green
on
mobility
on the energy side, clean energy side, but also on the green mobility side.
What about the support system, the supply chain? I'm talking about batteries, I'm talking about all the other stuff in between. Do you feel that Gentari has a place in this value chain and add value there?
Well, I think we are looking at new technology all the time to use them and also serve our customers, to become an integrated clean energy provider, I think we need to look at new technology all the time to create more value for our customers. So we are looking at different technology, whether it is on the storage space or on the energy generation side, wind and solar. We are constantly looking at technology to use it for our own usage.
Okay, we'll go for one more short break. When we come back, we'll conclude a conversation with Jintari. Thanks for staying on with us. I have with me Sushil Purohit of Jintari. Sushil, let's talk a little bit more about the two things that are really important in your business. The first is on demand. Where is the demand coming from? Particularly when it comes to market acceptance, market adoption, and market want. I would imagine my daughter's generation would crave demand, stomp their feet in terms of trying to get renewable energy. They are very socially conscious. I'm talking about Gen Z and Gen Alpha. Do you feel that this kind of consumers would want only sustainable energy moving forward? People like our age might not necessarily want it anymore. Do you feel that that is one area of concern? Another area is on challenges. I know nobody wants to oppose, I suppose, energy transition towards cleaner technology. I have not met one person just yet. But the skepticism is high. The investment into this area is high. And perhaps that would be some of the reluctancy in terms of adopting these kind of changes that companies like Jintari is bringing. How do you see these two areas, challenges and demand or consumers?
So, first of all, thank you for talking about your daughter, because I have a daughter and I think they are pretty much the same. I mean, this is the generation which are looking at, of course, sustainable way of living. Now, I think for me, when you talk about transition, it's a transition. It's not that we will tomorrow we will wake up to a sort of clean environment,
the world has changed,
right?
Yeah.
And every country and every economy will have their own path. I mean, they are all in sort of different reality. I mean, so I think what is really important is first of all to understand where you are as a country and as an economy, and then create a pathway to transition to a cleaner or low carbon future, as we call. So on the way, I think I would say that we would still need gas, which is if you talk about sort of deep decarbonization and rapid one, I think you need gas still as a part of the mix. You can get rid of coal, for example, but you need gas.
Your colleagues over at Petronas Gas is appreciative of that statement.
Well, I think it is important to understand. I mean, if you the half of the world is powered by coal right now, and that's the biggest emitter of CO2. How do you quickly take that low hanging fruit to transition to gas? So that's one thing. But at the same time, I think we must make sure that we are facilitating rapid growth in the renewable side, because if we want to get to a net zero if the world wants to get to a net zero by 2050, I think half of the actions needs to happen by 2030. If we don't do that, I think we can't get there. So that's going to be, I think these are the two things that we must understand, and that's what is going to create demand. And that is when you talk about investment, I mean, some people might say that it would require a lot of investment. I think there is enough money available for investing in clean energy projects, but at the same time, what would be the cost to the consumer? I think there are plenty of studies around in all kinds of countries that the cost to the consumer, if you really find the true cost of green energy, it will not be higher than what it is today. So I think we need to, when we are, and that's why it is important to understand where you are, create a pathway to get to net zero and see that you are doing it in the most optimal manner, where you are doing a rapid transition, but at the same time reducing CO2, and you are producing power at the lowest cost. And that would require us to really do systematic studies and investment plan.
When you talk about consumer economic standing, it's not the same for everyone, of course. Take myself, for instance. I have a fast EV charger at my condo. I have a fast EV charger here at the Astro campus. Therefore, I have calculated, I have owned the car 2 years now. I have gone to the petrol station 10 times, maybe less. 10 times I have visited a petrol station, and all the time it's charging at home, charging at work, charging at home, charging at work. That's the majority of the time that I travel anyway. But that is an extremely privileged lifestyle. We're talking about folks, 95% folks are not having that kind of arrangement in their day-to-day. Do you feel that that consumer adoption has to be aggravated by companies like yourselves introducing more EV chargers, by talking to car manufacturers, getting them to commit to faster net zero targets? Where do you feel that advocacy is going to come from, at least in your role?
Well, I think, I mean, again, first of all, like I said, it's a transition. So we need to, we need to recognize that. The other thing is, I think we need to find a way to create rapid adoption of both. First of all, you know, company like ours, we will of course go out and invest in charging points. But as a business organization, we would also like to see that the usage of these charging points are
utilized,
there, right?
Yeah.
You know, they are utilized, and for that, it is important that people can afford cars, EV in the first place, and that would require also some policy where we can incentivize EV users, for example. Now that might, you know, somebody might say that, well, that would cost more. Well, I think if we actually start to understand the entire value chain and see, you know, how much that would cost to people and how much employment that can generate, can it create an industry here for EV? Well, I think this is something that we need to really think about.
Okay, finally, one whole area of concern is on trying to tie up all these markets that you operate in and ensure that the people, the staffing, is up to speed, not just in terms of solutions, but the advocacy element of it. And I'm not just talking about consumer education element, I'm talking about advocacy towards governments and policymakers within these type of markets that you operate in. How extensive is the advocacy and policy influencing done by Gentari in the markets that you operate in?
Well, I think, you know, we are not the only one which is doing advocacy, of course. I mean, we cooperate, collaborate with other industry players, with like-minded companies to work together.
Including markets like Australia, for instance, that you're
Absolutely. I mean, and I think it is important to do that, because we're not the only one which are you know, out there to become a big player. I mean, when you talk about energy transition again, it's not about one company and or one technology. It's about sort of a lot of collaborations. You need technology player, you need investors, you need consumers, you need the utilities. You know, everyone needs to come together to do the advocacy, and that's what we do. We become a part of the ecosystem to actually educate and advocate.
Why the separate branding or identity of Gentari? Why not, you know, do this under the Petronas brand?
Well, that's a good question. Look, I think we, you know, Petronas, and this is probably one of those companies who have done it this way.
I mean, there's no right or wrong, but I'm understanding the philosophy behind it.
I'm really excited. We were formed as a separate company to go out and pursue opportunities in the energy transition and you know, have a focused team, have a focused management, have a focused, you know, board of directors which can actually catalyze and then facilitate the ambition. And that's why it was done. And I think we are, as an independent company, we are given those independence to take the opportunities, but also create a sort of ecosystem to pursue.
But Patronas has a strong brand identity, has a very good brand equity. Net Promoter Score for Patronas is actually quite high. Does this mean that you have to redo everything because of the new brand?
I think it's a good question. We don't have to, because we need to leverage the Petronas brand as well. I mean, the Petronas has a lot of presence in all kinds of countries,
and
I think it has a great name, and we are leveraging that in markets where we need. That's what we're doing.
Fantastic, Sushil. Thank you very much for taking the time to
speak
with
us. Thank you so
much. This is Sushil Purohit, the CEO of Gentari. If you want to learn more, head off to Gentari's website or Patronas, as well as s4awani.com. For now, thanks very much for joining us. Catch you in the next one.